Good morning, Sambonani, Dumelang, hello, hi. Today we are having quite an interesting conversation. For the past couple of days, we have been speaking towards our heritage as a nation, where we come from, who we are, and what makes South Africa unique. And today we are speaking to the First Nation, the Khoisan. Most people always make reference to this community as the indigenous people of the land. And today we are having a discussion on their roots, where they are, and just to learn more as we celebrate Heritage Day. This is Beyond the Ballot. I am Bafana Modise. Good morning. On the line, I have Prince Hector. Prince Hector, he is a nation builder. He's a prince in South Africa, a national convener of the main groupings amongst the First Nations of South Africa. He is the founder and national spokesperson of Obikwa Kam Kingdom, head of research of NPO in the Rural Areas Forum. Also as a Christian, a prophetic oversight, a king priest of South Africa. He was born from the First Nation as a royal descendant from the original Afrikaner kingdom from the maternal side. My brother, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, my brother Modise, and good morning to your viewers and listeners.
No, brother, as you know, most of us may not necessarily be well informed of the Khoisan people, the heritage, the roots. But before we even go to that, let's talk more about you. Who is Prince Hector? Give us a background.
Prince Hector was born in the south of South Africa in a region called the Cederberg region, mm-hmm. in a mountainous area where my mother gave birth in the field. Literally in the field. And it was later that day, by the afternoon, that they rushed this young woman with the already infant born to a local provincial hospital at that time. But it was a peculiar birth. It was a peculiar birth because the child were concealed within an ammonia bag. And the grandmother then just revealed the child's face by lifting the veil over his face. But still, the rest of his body was still concealed within this bag. And that afternoon, a physician were rushed from Cape Town to the rural areas of the Cederberg to come and see this phenomena, because the local medical assistants there, they didn't want to touch the phenomena. So on arrival of this chief physician from Cape Town, he then opened up the rest of the bag and he took the kid out, and they all saw that it was a boy.
My brother, sorry, I'm not sure if there is a delay here, but okay, we're doing well so far. I'm going to start here. The Khoisan community, most of us, we trace them from the 1400s, from the 1300s. Where does it originate? Who are the Khoisan people?
The Khoisan people has got a very, very, very rich history that can go back for centuries. What happened is that since the time of biblical diaspora, it is a known fact that our descendancy are stemming from Ham. And that takes us through the time of Noah, and that take us in different geographical areas within the globe. So our coexistence that has been highlighted by our drawings are found in the Egyptian pyramids up at the border of the Mediterranean Sea in the area of the people's Berbere near the stone of Gibraltar. Later downwards through the Nubian kingdom, the Horn of Ethiopia, right down to Namibia, over Zaire, right down to the tip of South Africa.
Because one would answer, you arrived in South Africa, you are within around what, 14th century, 10th century?
That's correct. The earliest scriptures that actually gave us information about other people detecting us here can go back as so early as we can recount ourselves of the early scriptures of the ancient Chinese peoples that did seafaring.
Because one would question the Afrikaners got here in 1652. The Shaka Zulus were also here before the Afrikaners. With that exodus of the Ngunis and other tribes into South Africa by then, what was the relationship? Did you guys engage in a war? Did you engage in a collaboration? How were you working with the Ngunis and other tribes which were settling in the southern side?
My brother Medusa, I will split the two. I will first touch on the issue of our Nguni brothers and sisters. Mm. Those tribal lines were quite interesting. The early stages of before our amalgamations and interminglings, there was quite a sturdy relationship between the kingdoms. Mm-hmm. Our kingdoms have got records that our doctors, our healing doctors, actually migrated up to the north to serve some of the tribes of the Nguni descendancy, whereby yeah. we did what we had, which is a understanding of the nature and the medicinal values of the plants and the herbs.
Okay.
And
yes, and let's continue.
And that interaction was so unique that because before the, I would say, European influence, there was this intertribal relationship. There was this understanding between the kingdoms. There was, of course, there was wars, but it was not a question of wars of dispossession. It was more a question of war between grazing territories or even for maidens, for argument's sake.
Okay. So therefore, I figure you're saying, even when the Zulus were here, the Xhosa started coming through, there was no much animosity between communities, because we know of the wars of Shaka Zulu, but in that history, it doesn't really touch on, did they have a war with the Khoisans?
Indeed, by the time of Chaka's reign, there was this animosity among the great Matabele and the tribes north to the north of Mozambique in those areas. And that factions of troops normally came down to interact with the Khoi and the San that is most southly positioned at that time. But we were not the aggressors in that sense. And they were not that aggressive against our peoples at that time, because they were just searching parties that were searching for certain individuals that they were sent to come and get.
Okay. I'm going to come to this one, the language, which most of us, the clicks, right? Some even will assume that maybe the Xhosas learned a thing or two from you guys. The Khoi language. And also understand that the community is, you have the Bushmans, you have the Hottentots, you have all these other subsections or other groupings within the community. How do you differ and how do you guys, how do you differ and does the language differ as well?
Indeed, Brother Mudise, among the Khoi and San, there are different dialects. Among the San people themselves, or better known as Bushman people themselves, there's quite a few dialects among those tribal diasporas that is similar in phonetic sound, but they are different in dialect. Such the same, you can go to the Kurana. The Kurana people do have a distinct dialect, but among the Kurana, there's also the slight deviations of dialects that are no longer in existence. The same with the Nama people. The Nama people has got the Khoikhoi Kuwap language, but among the Nama, there are also dialects that slightly differ amongst the people, of which most also then also died out. And then the distinction, there was also a distinct language of the Griqua people, which are still spoken, but in a lesser a degree. So there are quite a number of dialects among the Khoi and San that are still persist. And not to mention the most ancient of them all, the language of the Nu people, of the Nte people that are speaking the Nu language, which is obviously the oldest one that are now currently near to the Kalahari and in the Upington region, being spoken by only one individual still alive.
Wow, okay. So you're telling me there isn't really much culturally much difference between the Bushmen, the Hottentots, the San, and the Khoi. You are all one. There's not much culture-wise in terms of culture and heritage. You hold actually similar practices.
That's correct. Nowadays, there is such amalgamation have been taking place among the communities that we are now so interwoven that we
something happened. He got out. Please forgive me for that. I will try to get him back on online. Let's just check here very quick. We are speaking to Prince Hector, educating us on the heritage of the Khoi San people and also their rich history. Right now, just talking about the language. I think most people in our history books have always learned that about the Khoi San people. But however, they've not been celebrated enough in South Africa. And for some reason, even now, there are those, there's a man that I know who's been outside the Union buildings demanding recognition of the community. Please hang tight as I try to get him back online. Prince, let me just check here very quick. This is a podcast party beyond the ballot. Please remember to share this content and make sure that you share with others. Let me just see here very quick, and then we should be back. Okay, there you go. There you go. Proudly brought to you by Podcast Party. We are on YouTube. Subscribe on it. And at the same time, again, let's share the content. Let's share this knowledge. We are celebrating Heritage Day, South Africa, 30 years of democracy, our history, our heritage, where we come from.
Thank you very much.
Lovely. Uno, welcome back. Welcome back, my brother. As I was saying earlier, it is very clear that you did not necessarily have any commotion with the Gundis. However, there's a history where you went into combat with the Europeans, the Dutch, when they arrived by here. The wars, what informed those wars between you and the Dutch? And what do you think maybe you could have done better as a community at the time?
Yeah, remember, Brother Mudi said the first interactions with the Europeans was as early as the 1300s with seafarers that stranded onto our coast. So those interactions, most of them were undocumented, but it stayed within the diaspora in our word of mouth. So yes, the first interactions with them were not for war, but it was more for trading. More for trading. We had generous, heartily interaction with every ship that actually docked at our shores. And we traded livestock, fresh water. It only went into worries and misunderstandings when it come to the point where they now want to stole things and actually came to shore without proper liaison with those that were on the coast and how it actually happened for centuries before that.
Okay, because when you look at the history of it, right, I look at South African politics lately, how it's been the whole understanding is that the land was taken from the people, the ANC was formed as a result of losing land and being dispossessed, and I'm wondering all the time, where were the Khoisans in this time when there was this sudden unity or regrouping of the indigenous people against dispossession and reclaiming of their land?
Remember, Modise, that by the time when the so-called liberation struggles came in,
yes,
there was a blackout when it comes to sitting at the table. You know, when war is war, war rages. But when war is done, politics creep in.
Yes.
So when the wars were done, the Khoi and San people were at the front. They were at the front. They were taking the full hit of the colonial atrocities at that time. And they also the full hit of the slavery that then followed after that. The follow up on that was also the submission to be just slave laborers on the Dutch farmers' farms. So the full frontier scenario, the Khoi and San were always there. And when it came to the liberation movements and the struggling after those wars, politics came in and then blur out the leadership that were involved in those frontier fights that were there, that were actually assisting the whole of the liberation movements to rise.
I'm going to come into this. We've always heard, and I think history records that the kingdom in the past had over 22,000 years ago. You had a lot of at least 22,000 years ago. You had a lot of kingdoms. You are one of the largest groupings in the southern side. And the question is, the kingdoms, where are they based today? Where are they stronger? Where is the most Khoi people concentrated today in South Africa?
Today, in the borders of within South Africa, is what we call now, to make it understand for the normal person, is that there are main groupings, which consist of five main groupings, which is the Nama groups, the Griwa groups, the San or the Bushman groups, the Cape Khoi groups, and then also the Kurana groups. And those groups are still today existing, very much alive, with proper kingdoms, with proper royal houses in structures. And they are residing within the borders of South Africa, and they are there. There are even those that are residing within Namibia and also Botswana.
So in South Africa, is mainly Western Cape?
No. I have to shock you there. No, all over the country, all nine provinces, as the demarcation is now standing, in all nine provinces, there are proper structures with proper populations that are attaching to those royal houses.
Okay. Because usually we don't really see them a lot, especially with now we have the Council of Traditional Leaders in Parliament, the House of Traditional Leaders in Parliament. And one of your leaders who was outside Union buildings for quite a while, demanding recognition as a community. Please give us a background of that.
Yeah. There was a time when the Khoi San people now started to move to the front more radically to make known that they've been blacked out since the time of apartheid. And that persistence led to personas like the persona you now just mentioned that were sitting and camping in front of the union buildings. But there are also other actions that were also happening within the Khoi and San. And they might not catch the media, but there is much relevancy in that, that they also came up to the fore.
Okay. If one had to ask you, most of us, maybe we were miseducated, or rather we were miseducated. How what would be the distinction between the colored community and the Khoisan people? Well, what would be that distinctive differences between the two communities?
There are no distinction between the two communities. This is public education for you, my brother. There is no distinction between the two communities. Those communities are one nation, and they are just misinformed.
So the view that history will claim that the colored people, most of them were born from various tribes, like the Malays in Cape Town, while they came in here, they started interacting with Indian colors who have Indian descent. You have the Xhosa colors who are colors, but they have the Xhosa descent. Can they still also say they are Khoisans?
100% correct. 100% correct. If you now take, even if you take the so-called Afrikaner group, if you take them now and you go and send them to a test, you will find that the base gene within their bloodstream will be of Khoi and San descent. So if you look at the, if you do a census now of, in terms of that, then you will find that 80% of South Africa will be tested as Khoi and San descendancy.
But the question then becomes, Afrikaners how? Because we know they're Europeans and they came from Holland or Dutch, some came from France and Germany. How will they have this descent of the Khoisan? I'm just worried that we may find ourselves giving everyone the Khoisan title.
What I can tell you, Mudise, is that unfortunately many of them came without wives when they entered our shores, and there was because the first interaction was in the form of wars, and wars does bring about the atrocities that goes with wars. And many children were fathered. Many children were fathered from numerous descendancies into the Khoi and the San.
Okay, because maybe my question is this, my prince. When you look at the Zulu nation, for example, right? Even though there may have been intermarriages between the Zulus and the whites at the time, based on war and intermarriage, and people just intermarriage. However, like the Khoisans, they existed even before the Afrikaners could come and land in our shores, and there's gonna be that distinctive identity to say. Even though there could be some amongst us who are light-skinned because their fathers were white, but there is a majority of us, a nation, that is purely Khoisan, which are the Khoi people, not necessarily as a result of intermarriage or intersexuality, if that's the word to use.
Certainly. You will understand that when there's impact of another tribe towards another tribe's territory, those in the front line will be the ones that will now intermingle and will be the ones that will amalgamate in a sense, whether it's war or whether it's peaceful. But those that are further in the Jew, they will most likely stay more pure. And that is the case now today. You've got these pockets in South Africa and especially in Namibia as well, where there was no interwoven at all.
Yes. Because that's where most people maybe tend to say the ones in Namibia, the ones in Botswana, they speak the distinctive language, the San language, the click, the one with the click sound, and even the one in Namibia, and those are viewed as the Khoi and the San. And I think the debate has always been to say, can we really say the colors, the Malay colors in Cape Town are Khoisans, even though we understand that their history here was more from Malaysia?
I disagree with you there on the latter point. Since I myself were born in the Cederberg, and they still, my community are still residing there. 140 families at the moment in the field, in shacks, and they have never been they've never been dispossessed of that area, and we are still, we can still say that we've got a very, very, very distinct gene pool of Khoen San descent.
Okay. You look at the Khoisan community, and I think I'm very much, you know, I love to learn. I love to learn, and I'm very much interested in terms of what are your most traditions. Actually, let's gotta go into in terms of marriage. How do you hand women into marriage? Do you also have lobola in the Khoisan community? Do you also slaughter for celebrations, things of that sort? What would be those cultural things?
Numerous traditions exist among the different diaspora and tribes, among our peoples. Yes, there are, like you are now referring to, yes, there are the ones where you came into courtship with the maiden, and then you had to do certain things, like coming to the fore with a newborn lamb in your arms and coming to present it to the parents, and then ask them for courtship, and they will then either turn it down or they will agree onto it. And then there are also more things that needs to be done after that as the courtship progress.
Okay. And I'm looking at to say, when you say lamb, you mean one lamb or you bring like a whole crow?
No, you bring a lamb. There's a specific reason why the elders ask for a lamb. An unblemished lamb, and they looked at any it must be a lamb that is without any default by birth.
Okay, so even the does it matter the color of maybe the markings on the body? Must it be just pure white skin, or should he have black and white spots? How do you decide on it?
No, they will rather look at the lamb for any defaults, any birth defects, so to speak, and that will be ultimate. The color doesn't matter at all. It is just concluding the gesture, to bring a lamb that is without any birth defects.
Okay. That's interesting. If it's just a lamb, I think maybe I must get a queen from the Khoi people. I guess in the African side, you must bring 10 cows or 20 cows. Like, yay, man, it's quite costly. I'm going to come into this. Now in South Africa, we are going through a season of politics that speaks about land, the politics that speaks about Section 25, land expropriation, and there's been this debate. Where are the Khoisans in this debate? What is their position on this issue of land? Because since we're all the indigenous people, can you give us a view on where are you standing as a community on this issue?
As a nation on the issue of land, we are standing on a biblical view. The Constitution in Section 25, as it is being captured in our constitution, does make a relation to another section 25, and that is in Leviticus. In the book of Leviticus 25, it is actually unpacking how land needs to be handled. And we, the First Nation people, are standing firm on that foundation that whenever you occupy a land or a territory and you are another nation invading, do not remove the ancient landmarks.
Okay.
Do not remove the ancient landmarks. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the Lord himself is determining the rising of a kingdom, and he is determining the falling of a kingdom. If it happens that another kingdom is brought upon another kingdom, fortunately, when it comes to land, you can harvest that land for 49 years. But on the 50th 60th year, you need to return that land to the original owner. What am I saying? I'm saying that every 50 years, there needs to be a returning of land to the original owners. In South Africa's case, it never happened. It never happened. If I can just take us a step back, in 1910, I can just grab a date, 1910. If you take 1910 and you add 50 years, you get to 1916. That means the Union on South Africa existed from 1910 till 1916. But in 1961, South Africa changed from a union to a republic. So there was an understanding. There was an understanding of that leaders of that time being part British and part Afrikaner that they knew from 1910 to 1960 is 50 years. But they had to exchange the land back to the original people. They never did. They never did. They actually formed just the Boere generals. They formed a later government with a younger generation, and they then declared the Republic of South Africa. If I take it back, if I even take it more further, if I take it from 1960 and at another 50 years, it brings out up. It brings us to 2011. 2011 was another 50 years, another chance for South Africa to actually give the land back to the original owners, which is not the Afrikaners, which is not the liberation movements, which is not the British, which is not the Batavian or the Dutch. It is the Khoi. Now, what am I saying, Brother Modise? I'm saying that 50 years spans, which is your jubilee mark, had an opportunity and gave an opportunity to give the land back to the Khoi and San peoples in 2011. In 1960, there was another opportunity. In 1910, there was another opportunity. In 1740, there was, in 1840, there was another opportunity. It never happened that the land originally were given back to the original.
Okay. It seems like we lost him again. I'm hoping he can come back very soon.
I'm back.
Okay. Yes. Welcome back, Prince. I'm gonna come into this. So therefore, you are saying you would want to reclaim the land of South Africa back to the Khoi people. Is that your position to say you are going to expropriate and reclaim the land?
It is not a question of reclaiming. It is a biblical value. It's a biblical value whereby the priesthood of a country. Let me explain it this way. If there's a priesthood in a country, no nation can exist without a priesthood. What do you say? And the priesthood are in the understanding of the times and the seasons. They will honor the jubilee. Like the British and the Dutch. The Dutch understood the jubilee. That is why they gave in 1910, the Rhodes administration gave to the Afrikaner generals in 1910. And the Afrikaner generals were brought in the understanding based on their priesthood, understanding the biblical values and jubilee. They released the land in 1960 to the younger Afrikaner generation. And the Afrikaner generation with the Evie de Klerks in the 1990s knew, and they told the liberation regime, listen, we cannot give it to you. We have to give it to the original owners. Hence the 1994 scenario and debacles that happened there. And they knew that there was a preparation phase for these liberation movement personas, but they were greedy. They were greedy. They didn't want to wait for the jubilee year because as you can recall, the jubilee year is only coming in 2011. So hence, the so-called apartheid government told them that there's a preparation phase, and that preparation phase will take them to 2011 when the handover will actually take place. But they were greedy. and they jumped into the and they cut the jubilee year.
Yes, you know, I'm a believer myself, and usually you are looking, you are behind the flag of Israel, the holy land of our Lord, and I look at on the issue of this that the Afrikaners, when they give the land back or when they went to reclaim the republic and live in the Commonwealth at the time, was basically on the idea that they were now free and they wanted independence. And they didn't want to submit under the crown of the Queen of London at the time. And I look at also how this the Afrikaners themselves, this all handing over of land was done through a political process and either liberation, either engagement. But there was a political process into it. So as much as I identify largely with my Christian faith, but on a political a pragmatic way, how do you envision this handover being done? Will the community need to take the state to court and reclaim the land? Will you mobilize your people and forge forward a liberation struggle? I mean, even the Afrikaners themselves were very God-fearing and believing in God, but they went to wars. They fought for the land. Would that be the position as well to say you are going to go to battle with God on your side to reclaim this land? What would be the, because I mean, look at Israel today as you are behind it. Israel came back after 2,000 years to reclaim their land. And when they reclaimed their land, they went into battle, they went into negotiations. There was a political process. There was an engagement force. And then I feel that maybe from your explanation, where I'm missing would be the pragmatic political process that the community would love to explore in terms of getting that land being given back to the people, the indigenous people.
Interestingly, there is quite a good record of land in South Africa, the dispossession thereof. When I want to bring you to the understanding how land is actually dispossessed is exactly as you unpacked it. It's either by war and then after by political, diplomatic interactions. So our understanding is that there was a war. There was a war in 1652. And that actually dispossessed the frontline Khoi people. And the very same dispossessors were also dispossessed in 1795 and between 1795 and 1806 by the British. So from 1806, the British reigned until 1910. So in 1910, there was most the Anglo-Boer Wars that brought about that transition. And since the Afrikaner Boere since 1910 and 1960, there was this transition between the younger and the older generation of Afrikaner Dom. So between the 1960s now and the 1994 was the transition that we lived through, me and you, we lived it through, and that is what we saw transpired. For since all these dispossessions, the Khoi and San were never removed from the land. They were always there. They were always there. So the land stayed theirs. The land stayed theirs since the order of the jubilee factor that is biblical has been rejected, having the land putting back to the Khoi and San. The Khoi and San now currently are still the original owners of this country. We don't have to go to court. We don't have to go to court. We don't have to go to court. The land is still, according to the biblical order, it is still in the hands of the Khoi and San people. We are still the ones that can pray to the land and the land will react.
Definitely. I think my question was largely due to if in any case, if in any case you are going to, because right now we don't even have the Khoi language as an official language in South Africa, right? When you say the 11 official languages, you only have the Zulu, Xhosa, Tswana, Sesotho, Pedi, and Afrikaans, but we don't also have you as recognized. And I don't think that is fair. I don't think that is right. But I think also it will come from the community themselves to organize themselves and to actually pursue a process where they are also engaged in political discourse in the country, don't you think?
Yes, indeed. Up to now, Modise, I can tell you that the resistance from the Khoisan in fighting what they've been prevented from to do is severe. Many of our stalwarts has passed on. Many stalwarts has passed on. There is a definite blackout towards the Khoisan peoples. All the parastatals of the state have been influenced not to assist the Khoisan in their endeavors. And since we don't have held political power, we were working against the authorities of the day. Whether you go to court, whether you go to in a civil movement, we are been working against.
No, definitely. I think one thing that is always stronger, like yourself as a prince of the community, I think it will be down to you to mobilize your people, to reconstruct, to have a stronger voice, to mobilize. Even needs to be protest, but you only get to have a political voice once you demand it. It's not given. Sadly, the history of this country has taught us that the more silent you are, the more irrelevant you may be seen to be. So it's always good to stand out there and mobilize yourself. But that's just a political discussion. I don't want to get into that. But my hope and wish it is that yourselves and your community could be seen as an equal member of society, having all these languages. In the next couple of years, me, I could speak San, and somebody else could speak Khoikhoi, and we can become one nation in one land, not having this 11 official languages of South Africa, and there is a small grouping of Khoisans that are hardly consulted, are hardly engaged. They don't have a voice in parliament. I don't think that is the way to go. You have rights. You are indigenous into this land, and I think also the power is with you, the leaders of the community, to mobilize and reconstruct, to actually push that you are seen. Because as you speak, the current generation today don't even have a clue of the rich history that your community have in this land. And you can't just go unabated. We can't just go ahead not educated on this subject.
I can confirm that as a prince on the issue of unity and rising up, I can confirm to you that I was part and parcel of a prophetic upbringing of the five main groupings in the country, which is the Nama, the Kurana, the Griqua, the Cape Khoi, and the Bushman formations. I can, as I sit here, I'm part of a national convening group that is convening the five main groupings with their royals, and there is a steady flow of information among ourselves. There is a oneness of the nation, and there is no disunity as it is now by it is proclaimed. There's disunity among the Khoi. No, there's a sense of belonging amongst the Khoi, a oneness. And if there's now a there's now a national call for the Khoi to be called up by government, they will see it. They will see the unity among the Khoi.
No, definitely. I'm gonna jump into this, my brother. You mentioned that you're in Namibia, you're in Botswana, South Africa, and you have kingdoms that are functioning there. What is their structures? How does it work? Just to educate someone who may not necessarily understand how the kingdoms work. How does the succession work within the community?
in Namibia. I can start with Namibia. In Namibia, the kingdom structure works from what they called a captain. which is now a Western word, but that captainship thus came from an ancient lineage of succession. The same within South Africa, the same within South Africa. In South Africa, there is kingships that were reinstated, and those kingships are existing from an existing bloodline lineage that came also from ancient descent. So there is more than enough information around those royal houses that can substantiate.
Okay. My brother, thank you for your time. But before I let you go, I always give 2 minutes of fame. So like you, if you're in studio, I would say, look at the camera. But right now you are looking at the camera. So I would say to you, what is your message to South Africans, to the Khoi Nation, as we wrap up Heritage Month in our nation? Please, the moment starts now. Your 2 minutes just started. Go.
My fellow Khoi San people, nation, First Nation of South Africa, be strong. There's hope. I'm speaking life to you. What we can see is that there is a rise of us as a nation. Be ready to occupy leadership positions. For soon to come, you will be placed in a position of power. Amen.
Amen. My brother, thank you very much, and hoping to see you once again. And thank you for taking this time out. Really fruitful engagement. I've learned a lot myself about the community, and I wish you all well. And let's build that. Let's build that knowledge. Let's build that understanding amongst the people. This rich history can't just go into history and unacknowledged. So I'm with you in solidarity. The Khoi people are indigenous to our land, and it's important that your history is widely publicized, and you have museums that will speak towards this reality. But other than that, thank you, my brother. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for taking your time.
Thank you, Leader Modisha, and thank you for your studio team that grant me this opportunity.
My pleasure, sir. Other than that, this was Beyond the Ballot. I am Bafana Modise. Thank you for taking your time out. Remember to subscribe, to share the content. And yes, this was Beyond the Ballot, proudly brought to you by Podcast Party. Tune in, turn up, and take action. Ciao, ciao.